Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're joined now by Kirk, and we're going to return to our observations about Paul and Pauline Christianity. I don't know if you were listening during the first hour, Kirk, but William, whom you know from the Friday night Blog Talk Radio show on Yada Yada Radio, sent me a email over the weekend that suggests that Shaul is condemned as deadly in the 28th chapter of Yashaya Isaiah.
Mm-hmm. I read it just a little while ago and looked it up in a literary.
Yeah.
And it's true, it's there. Shaul is still the same word as Shaul.
Right.
So, and it does talk a covenant with death.
Yes.
And but I think if you don't have the context of Chabaouk saying he's a plague of death,
right,
it doesn't resonate quite as well just when
right.
you find it there. But absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, what's different in Chabaouk is that where Sheol and Shaul were written the same way, and therefore you have to distinguish, is this about a man named Shaul, which would be Paul, or is this about a place named Sheol, written exactly the same way in Hebrew, which is the place of separation from Yahweh. In Chabaouk, this is made absolutely, unequivocally in favor of a man named Shaul, because all the way through, Yahweh talks about a singular masculine individual, and Sheol is a place. It is not a lone masculine individual.
Right.
And second, in Chabaouk, Yahweh identifies personality characteristics to the place, and Sheol as a place cannot exhibit arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
But this, but you can exhibit arrogance to an individual, Shaul.
Right.
Yahweh says that he will certainly come, and he will come at the time of the fulfillment of the Moed in Chabaouk, and a place like Sheol cannot come, and it most certainly would be distanced, not come at the time that the Moed are being fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
And it also says that this individual is fixated with the male genitalia while being opposed to circumcision. Sheol is a place for incarcerating spiritual beings. It is not fixated on the male genitalia. So it's obvious that Chabaouk is speaking of a male individual. But more than that, before Yahweh, in fact, in the very sentence that Yahweh uses to identify Shaul, who is the founder of the Christian religion and author of half of its New Testament, in the very statement where he says that Shaul is the plague of death, he says he and his soul
mm-hmm.
are the plague of death.
Right.
Sheol doesn't have a soul, does it? It's a place.
No.
So it's... it is obvious there that you cannot use Sheol, and that it is absolutely Shaul, and there would be only one Shaul following the time of Yashaya, of Chabaouk, because at the time Chabaouk was written, 400 years earlier, King Shaul had been killed. So he couldn't be speaking of somebody that's going to come named Shaul, Saul, Paul. If you're referencing that one, and there's only one other Shaul in all of human history that is known to us that would have warranted the declaration about, and that's the Paul of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
But as we move to Yashaya, Yashaya was written before Chabaouk. Chabaouk was written exactly 666 years before Paul wrote his first letter, Galatians, in response to the Jerusalem summit. But Yashaya was written about 750 BCE. So Yeshaya precedes Chabaouk. So the very fact that we'll have programs here where we're going to devote ourselves to that passage that you were looking up through the interlinears over the weekend, we have to keep in mind that we're doing it in reverse order. We've done the Chabaouk passage, and now we're going to consider what Yahweh had to say about Paul and Christianity through Yeshaya, Isaiah. The difference is that we did it in the opposite order that he revealed these two prophecies.
Right. Yada?
Yes.
Yes. If I may, I'd like to do something very off topic for just a minute.
Okay.
And then something very, come back to this, or something very on topic, and then I have to take my leave.
Mm-hmm.
But the off topic thing is this. The Shanghai market closed down 8.5% yet today.
Right.
The British and French markets are off about 3.5%, the French mm-hmm. about 5%, and the U.S. 3%. So I just mm-hmm. like throw that out there for a moment.
Yeah, and by the way, that's important. Because there is a realization, A, that the global markets are all interrelated, meaning there's going to be much easier to control a global economic system when it's imposed. And number two, that there is a realization that calamity is on our doorstep. These are gargantuan devaluations of businesses, gargantuan. That are taking place right now, and so right. So it is that kind of move, that kind of a lightning bolt relative to the fragile nature of the condition of the deplorable condition of, and the integration of global economics, is fits right into Yeshaya. I mean, Yeshaya goes and speaks of these very days, so people ought to be aware of that. So that is somewhat related.
And my on-topic question is, when you pronouncing the name of Chabaouk, you're saying Chabaouk, which most people, especially Christians, are used to saying
Habakkuk.
Or Habakkuk, and there being two K's is, other words, like if you drop the middle K from Habakkuk, you'd have Habakkuk.
I can help here just a bit. The repeated letter in Hebrew is all a function of the Masoretic.
Okay.
It's almost never. I mean, the number of times that you'll see a repeated letter in Hebrew is slim and far between. It is very, very, very seldom in Hebrew to have a side by side repeated letter, and so
ook instead of ak ook.
That is correct. That is correct.
Okay, right.
Now, that said, Glenn, I mean, full well, because I've said this so many times. I have lots of inabilities. And one of my inabilities, I think, is related to the inability that Moshe protested about. I am not an effective spokesperson as it relates to pronouncing all words properly. It's one of my liabilities. I did not understand phonics. I did not succeed at phonics. I am not good at this. It's one of my vulnerabilities. And it was one of the trepidations even in doing this program, is to go from the written word to the spoken word, knowing that it was a vulnerability. And I actually decided to go ahead with this, knowing that I was not, would not pronounce all words correctly, that vulnerability would provide a sharp sense not only of humility into the process, but also I think when you become vulnerable, when you're willing to become vulnerable, when you're working to convey Yahweh's message as Moshe ultimately had to do, I think it puts you in the right mindset.
Right.
Because you have to be reliant at that point.
Right, and it's interesting because, I come from a background where, I like to think that like English grammar, pronunciation, and syntax were heavily emphasized during the time period I grew up in school and stuff. So and like I'm generally pretty good at that. But so I look at, and so often I'm, I find myself critiquing stuff on, in the realm of Patriot Talk Radio, yada, you're a linguist.
When you're making comparisons to people who are absolutely lost and not particularly well educated, and by educated I don't mean formal education here, I mean the willingness to spend considerable time and effort to become aware, researching the proper resources. I'm not certain that comparison is one that I would want to celebrate.
Yeah, exactly. even the commercials make me cringe. But anyway, all right. Well, listen, I've got to be on my way.
Good points. Good points, both of them. Good points, both of them. Thank you. So, Kirk, we are. And I have not, I have this allergy to doing something that I'm not sure I will ever, so long as I'm able, never violate. The passage that was sent to me was sent that specifically called Shaul deadly. And so the tendency is, well, go translate that passage. I can't do that. I mean, I'm hoping that the reason I can't do that is a good thing. Because I spent most of yesterday, and when I tell you this, you're going to laugh, but I spent most of yesterday translating Yeshaya, 28th chapter, verses 1 and 2. And I just finished 2 this morning. And you might say, well, come on. I mean, how could it take that long?
No, it takes me longer than that.
And I'm going to tell you, there is no book that is more challenging to translate than Yeshaya. His vocabulary is well beyond what you find elsewhere. There are words that appear only in his books. And so there are words that are chosen that reflect very subtle nuances. And so I find that every word is an adventure into etymology. It's an adventure into the roots of the language Yahweh chose to communicate with us. So it takes a very long time. But I wanted to do it in context. Kirk, I was taking a long-winded approach to explaining why I couldn't just go and translate Yeshaya 28. I think it was like 15, 16, or 17 that was associating Shaul, that's Paul, the founder of the Christian religion, with death. And that is that I don't ever like to translate or even consider anything Yahweh had to say out of context. You know, what if the context here was of a time long ago, like King Saul? What if the context here was, you know, the timing of the Moed Mikre? So you really have to, I think, to view things in context. But the other reason is that I'm just not smart enough to translate something out of context. Because like all languages, every word has nuances. And the nuance, particularly when you're dealing with the Yeshaya, Isaiah, is the part of the word that he's most interested in conveying. And if you don't view it in context, you've got, you know, one chance in 50 of getting it right. And then the other thing that I find is that by viewing something in context, you learn a ton.
Well, this whole thing with Shaul. I mean, and then when we went from there to back to old King Shaul.
Right. Context. Exactly. Context. Yahweh provides us with a context to understand the religious and political conditions that were imposed by Theodosius, where he blended kingship and militarism and politics and religion all into one entity, creating the Roman Catholic, not only church, but also the Holy Roman Empire. And through the story of King Saul, King Shaul, Yahweh provided us with a prophetic window, not only into what would be imposed by blending Christianity and politics and militarism together, but also gave us a window of understanding the corruptions and the consequence of embracing the wannabe apostle, Paul.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought that quite amazing. Had you come to that conclusion before?
No. No, I missed it entirely.
Well, somebody mentioned it initially, Mavis Hidron, on a Friday show, and that's then mm-hmm. kind of sent you off to there.
Yeah, I can see adding a chapters to the book Questioning Paul, dealing with not only King Saul, and in that, it's a broad-based reason that we ought to walk away from religion and politics and militarism, is the whole King Saul story. And then comparing that to Paul, whose treatise is found in the book named for those very Romans that Theodosius created the Holy Roman Empire and imposed this integration of religion and politics that created the feudal system that was so oppressive for 1,000 years throughout Europe. But also the realization that he's talking about Shaul
mm-hmm.
and the consequence of trusting these individuals, because Shaul wrote his book to Romans and spoke favorably of the Roman government. So people just ought to submit to it, that it was established by his God. And so there's so much of that story that applies to both, you know, the world we live in today and specifically to the individual. And then, of course, this whole chapter of Yeshayah, the 28th chapter of Yeshayah, is it specifically calls Shaul deadly.
Yeah. Covenant with death.
Yeah. In fact, let me share some of the beginnings of this. You get a little feeling as to mm-hmm. Who he's talking about, why he's talking about it, and what the kind of the preamble of as he establishes the scene here.
Okay.
It begins with woe. Woe is not a good thing.
No.
Woe is always a bad thing. It means alas, declaring a warning regarding an extreme lack of understanding and the prevalence of delusion. Oi in Hebrew. Oi, you know, means that people have been deceived. People, for the most part, do not understand. And as a result of a lack of understanding and the prevalence of delusion, Yahweh is declaring a warning. Woe. Oi. And then it says to the, and I've rearranged these words to reflect their order in the Dead Sea Scrolls, as opposed to the Masoretic. So in the Dead Sea Scrolls, the next word is Giyuth, starting with the G, which is the most negative letter in Hebrew. Woe to the presumptive, arrogant, and conceited.
Sound familiar?
So the second word here is geuth. It means to be presumptive. To presumptive means to ascribe something to yourself, an authority to yourself, a conclusion that is invalid, that is not warranted. For example, when Paul said that he was an apostle, that's a presumptive title. Yahweh never gave him that title.
Mm-mm.
Yahusha never gave him that title. So that's presumptive. That it is, when he said that the world was given to him, that Shimon Kephish, Jacob, which would be Peter and James, and also Yohanan, he specifically mentioned Yohanan and John, were limited to Jews only.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Kirk, you've read Revelation, right?
Sure.
And you know Revelation was scribed by Yohanan on behalf of Yahusha, correct?
Correct.
Doesn't the book of Revelation open with seven open letters?
Mm-hmm.
give them help.
Are any of the sites of those seven cities that represent the seven eras of humanity, are any of those sites in Israel?
No, they're all up in where John was and where Paul was.
They're all up in modern-day Turkey, every single one of them, right?
Right, mm-hmm. On the west coast, yeah.
Yeah. So how is it possible that Yahusha could have limited Yahochanan to Jews only in Israel and given Paul the express dominion for the rest of the world if Yahusha not only picked Yahochanan to convey his final prophecies, but that Yahochanan, that the revelation begins with seven open letters and the seven cities are all way outside of Israel. In fact, they kind of surround where Paul was focused and where he came from.
Well, you have to throw away 4,000 years of history.
Yeah, you have to throw away all of the facts.
He's been offering it to the Goyim for 4,000 years, and yeah. Most of it was just almost being sucked in with the undertow.
Yeah.
You had to be close by to hear it, but because they kept running away from Jerusalem.
Yeah.
But absolutely. I mean, so all of a sudden now?
Oh, yeah.
Now the Miswa, the Chob, the Mishpat, all that's gone?
You'd have to throw out the book of Revelation if you're a Christian to accept the book of Galatians.
And
the book of Revelations does exactly the opposite of what Paul was claiming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Yahusha speaking in first person. All right, so it says, woe to the presumptive. So that would be presumptive. That would be Paul for sure. The arrogant and conceited. The self-important, when Paul was presenting himself and demeaning everyone else and elevating his own position. He was not only conceited and arrogant, but self-important. And this is an unwarranted authority. I don't think there's any better depiction of Paul than unwarranted authority.
Mm-hmm.
But throughout this, Paul claims in his second letter to the Corinthians that he was arrogant, but that yet, even though he was arrogant, in his case, it was justified because of the superiority of his revelations.
Oh, yeah.
And that he says that the only reason that his arrogance was kept in check, because it was deserved and appropriate, was that he was demon-possessed and that Satan himself had to control Paul's ego.
That's the same spirit that was...
Wow. Yeah, it's the same spirit where all the rest of the people that Yahweh chose to represent him all said, why are you choosing me? Come on, you can do better.
Yeah, well.
I have no qualities that you would find appealing or that anybody would find appealing. As a matter of fact, I have these liabilities that would hinder your ability to use me.
Well, yeah, you have those, and then you talk with me.
Yeah, I mean,
good luck,
yeah,
pal.
Yeah, and it is our limitations
mm-hmm.
that make us usable. That's the guy that gets up in front of the masses at a mega church and that has the perfect diction and the perfect suit and the perfect emotion that he can and the perfect story that he can weave.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he's the person that God wouldn't use if he was the last person on earth. Anyway, so it says
that he doesn't want to manipulate you. He's not trying to manipulate.
No.
We're trying to teach you.
And there is a flaw in logic that is pervasive today, and that flaw is that people confuse the message and the messenger. There's only one place where message and messenger are the same. Maybe more than one, but there are very few. And the places where message and messenger are the same is Noah, Abraham, Moshe, to be certain, message and messenger.
Mm-hmm.
Are the same.
Dode.
Yahusha, Dode, Yashaya, Hosha are examples where message and messenger are one and the same. And Yahusha, as he, the two Yahushas, Yahusha, Ben Nun, the one that led the chosen people into Yahweh's home in Israel. into the land. And then there's the Yosha that that is the diminished manifestation of Yahweh, circa year 4000, yeah. That Yosha is a total and complete juxtaposition of an individual and the Word. They are absolutely synonymous. So the message and the messenger are synonymous when they come to Yosha, which is the problem that Christians have, is they can't deal with what he said or what he did, recognizing that he was the Torah in the flesh. So not knowing how to deal with that, Christians are want to criticize the messenger rather than deal with the message. And it's a terrible flaw in logic. So anyway, this says, woe to the presumptive, to the arrogant and conceited, the self-important, the unwarranted, those claiming unwarranted authority, of people who are moral failures and agitators. Well, you couldn't have a person more prone to agitation than Paul. He was agitating everyone. And even admit to being violent in his agitation. And moral failure, he in Romans says that he was sexually perverted. Mm-hmm. In Galatians, he admits to being physically perverted. And then he speaks of being morally perverted. So you've got to both. And of using smoke and falsely claiming the authority of the majesty of God. Now the next word here is, because all of that is modifying crown or wreath. You know, Paul spoke of this crown of victory. The crown of victory in Greek would be Nike. The town Nicaea, where you had the Council of Nicaea, was held. It's that's the Greek god of a victory. The shoes, Nike shoes, are named after the Greek goddess, god of victory. And the wreath was put on the victor's head as a symbol that they had won, they had beaten others at some competition, or in the case of the Roman Empire, that their legions had beat out rival legions of other Romans, and so the crown was a laurel wreath symbolizing their god, which was the sun, round as the sun. So this is a not the normal Hebrew word for crown, but atara, which can be synonymous for crown, wreath, trophy taken by a victor, mark of human leadership, particularly within religious, political, and military institutions. It is a word used whereby common people are surrounded and encircled, restricting their ability to distance themselves from the regime. Unable to flee, unable to rebel. It's a symbol of human authority to rule over others and to claim a uniquely superior status. It is related to ataf, which means to cover over and hide the truth, turning people in the wrong direction, thereby causing them to be weak, ultimately being diminished. And the first thing that came to my mind, of course, when you're talking about this circular device that was designed to be the sign of institutional authority, is that church mm-hmm. is based upon the word circle.
Sure.
It's church is the name of the goddess of the Germanic pagan religion that was the daughter of the sun. Her name was Church. She became the basis of the Christian word church. She is it's from her name that we get the English words circle, circus, and circuit. So even today, too, in Christianity, wreaths are used, and they're round to as a religious symbol, and halos, which are the old pagan vestige, are used around the heads of the Christian saints and the Christian gods.
Right.
So church, And these wreaths and these crowns and symbols of authority have permeated Christendom.
Can't get away from it.
Can't get away from it. And so God is saying that the people who are arrogant, who are conceited, who are presumptuous, are those who are claiming authority. And that they're using, and he could have chosen the standard Hebrew word for crown, but didn't. And he chose a word that conveys the very essence of Christianity. It's church.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason why I find that Yahshua Isaiah takes so long to translate. You have to figure out, well, why didn't he use the standard Hebrew word for crown?
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you find out that an uncommon word has been used, then we are required, if we want to understand, to come up with why did he. And the first thing you find is this crown is also associated with this circular wreath that was worn by those who would be claiming victory, military victory, for example. And Paul references that often.
A lot.
So, my friend Kirk, when I read this, and the first thing that I came to is this unique word for crown, which was a wreath, a trophy taken by the victor as a claim of authority over people. And we were, and it was described as presumptive and arrogant, of self-important and unwarranted authority. The first thing that came to my mind is, didn't Paul claim that he had a crown?
Mm-hmm.
And son of a gun. He does often. But I just brought up one of them, which was Philippians. Philippians 4:1. It reads, "Therefore, my beloved brethren." So this is, his brothers. So this is his family. This is his covenant. And this is his family. It's got nothing to do with Yahweh. Like I might say, that I enjoy my covenant family relationship with other covenant members.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not my family, other than I'm part of it. It's Jehovah's family.
That's the implication.
Yeah, yeah. Whom I long to see, my joy and crown.
He calls them his children, too.
Yeah, my joy and crown. Now, I want you to explain to me, how is it possible that you get a crown, and that he would even claim a crown here from brothers? But, you've come to some degree, along with your wife, Terry,
mm-hmm.
to know Yahweh because I think she heard me speak on some radio show. She decided to check up on what I had to say, read it, shared it with you that evening, and you guys began to read it together, and you began to do an investigation to see whether or not these things were an accurate reflection of Yahweh's testimony. So it was Yahweh's testimony, but, it took some time to try to translate it and convey it that drew you initially toward the covenant, at least pointed a light towards the path to Yahweh.
Sure.
Have I ever claimed to have earned a crown or to have a crown based on that?
Absolutely not.
Would you even think it'd be possible that somebody who is conveying Yahweh's plan and testimony in his family covenant is going to say, oh yeah, if you're a part of this, you'll get a crown?
Well, they do that in Christianity.
Oh my goodness. I mean, this idea of having a political or religious sign of authority being associated with conveying Yahweh's testimony is preposterous. But Paul, in fact, claimed to have this crown of victory, the very thing that is being spoken of here. And Yahweh said, that's presumptive. That's arrogant. That's conceited. It's unwarranted.
Where else? No. You can't find it anywhere.
No, but Paul certainly claimed it. Do you find any place where Moshe said, you know, I he's delivered the Torah, man. If anybody deserved a crown, it'd be him. Do you hear any place where he is saying, I've won this crown by leading the children of Israel out of Egypt?
No, it would not come out of their mouth.
No. Do you see Noah saying, where's my crown? Now I'm part of this covenant. Now where's my crown?
No.
No. You see Abraham saying, okay, God, the covenant thing, that was that's cool and everything, but where's my crown? I mean, did you find, Yosha, if Yosha wanted to wear a cotton picking crown, he'd wear one. I mean, he is a diminished manifestation of the creator of the universe. That qualifies for crown. Did he ever wear one?
No.
The only crown that he ever put on, was ever put on his head, was put on by someone else. He did not put it on, and it was a crown of thorns to mock him.
Right.
Now, if Yosha didn't have a crown, you think of the presumptive nature of Paul, the conceited nature of Paul claiming that he somehow had a crown because of these people?
Now, is it Paul or
mm-hmm.
Ephraim, the northern tribes of Israel, which turned to other gods, twisted the Torah, did
mm-hmm.
the same thing. They
mm-hmm.
set up a new temple. You know,
mm-hmm.
the people don't go down to Jerusalem, stay
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
Set up a new priesthood,
mm-hmm.
and they fought against Yehuda.
Yeah. In fact, this first statement ends with a mention of Ephraim. And the first thing is, wait a minute, Benjamin, Paul was a Benjamite,
right.
isn't part of Ephraim. Why mention Ephraim? And you're going to have to hang on to that question, because we're not going to return until tomorrow at this time. But tomorrow at this time, we're going to explain why Yahweh chose Ephraim in relation to this prophecy regarding Paul being so deadly. May Yah bless you between now and then. Thank you, Kirk.
Yes, sir.